Super Tuesday is now in the books with the delegates in the various candidates' columns. While Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton grabbed the lion's share of delegates and state wins, did any other candidate prove a point or maybe buy some time looking ahead? How is congressional leadership looking at this whole election race between now and November that we see developing? Here with that look back and a look ahead is National Review Institute Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism, Ian Tuttle. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
And it's nationalreview.com to read Ian's work. And over on ISO, we have a direct link, so you don't have to, we can put Ian in front of the line so you can get to his stuff first through the link we have over at issuesandideasradio.com. So you look at the tally, at least in the last numbers I had, by the time the night was done, Trump wound up with 285 delegates, Cruz 161, Rubio 87, Kasich 25, and Carson 8. Your overview of Super Tuesday, and as I said in the intro, did anyone buy some time? Did anyone prove a point?
It's hard to say. Everyone performed a little. Everyone seemed to perform a little better and a little worse than we expected. I would say, obviously, you have to look at last night and say it was a very strong night for Donald Trump. There's no question he performed extremely well, especially in some of those SEC states, and then Massachusetts, he got 49.5% of the vote. That's just crushing. But you also have to note that Ted Cruz won not only Texas and convincingly, which was a test they needed to pass, but he won Oklahoma, and he also won Alaska. So now you have Cruz with four states. Rubio underperformed in relative to some of the expectations that at least someone in his campaign put forward during the afternoon yesterday, but he also won Minnesota. So the, when does Marco Rubio win a state line, it can now be retired. So it's curious looking forward, because the conventional wisdom before this had been everybody needs to drop out and Republicans need to consolidate behind the one anti-Trump candidate. It's not clear now, even with Cruz having a significant lead among the anti-Trump candidates, that anti-Trump forces could consolidate behind him or would, given the opportunity, and win. So maybe it's now the case that all of these guys, including John Kasich, stay in, and you basically try to keep Donald Trump under the delegate threshold prior to the convention. It's all very hazy, given what happened last night.
Although Trump has hit the one watermark of majority of voters in at least eight states to be able to be nominated. That was the first. Was that the Romney rule? Or no, that was another. That was that was the Romney rule, wasn't it?
I think that's right. I don't want to go on record for it. I'm not positive.
But looking at the state by state too, where things were better than for some and not for others. Rubio had been expected to at least finish second, if not win Virginia, and Cruz, Arkansas, and both those states went for Trump.
Right. Virginia was always a toss-up, and you look at the delegate count, and Donald Trump's going to get 17 delegates, and Marco Rubio's going to get 16. So delegates, they effectively ran sort of neck and neck. Like I said, everyone seemed to both overperform and underperform, which leaves it difficult to draw conclusions about what exactly is the smart play going forward for these anti-Trump candidates. I mean, if you're Donald Trump, he did something that seems fairly intelligent last night, which is he didn't hold a rally; he held a press conference. So you avoided the cheering, screaming fans, and you had a Donald Trump who looked a little more sober as Donald Trump could ever look. And it was a prudent thing to do when you've just won the lion's share of the states, a significant portion of the popular vote, and you're hoping to basically go up there and say, look, it's effectively over. I'm going to be the nominee. Everybody just needs to rally behind me. It's a lot easier to do when you're dealing directly with the media and without the fanfare. I think that was probably a smart decision that's going to play well for him over the next 24 hours.
With Ian Tuttle, who is National Review Institute Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism, nationalreview.com, the website, listening to Issues and Ideas. What kind of dilemma is now currently before the GOP establishment? Because they're obviously anti-Trump by and large. There are a few breakaways, Jeff Sessions, Chris Christie, a few other names. But then on the other hand, they look at Trump and they go, yeah, but he's bringing out voters.
I think that's right. And they're also, at least the behind-the-scenes reporting that we get is often that they're deeply anti-Cruz. If Rubio is not going to be the anti-Trump candidate, and like I said, that's totally unclear, and it seems people are going to rally around Cruz, the establishment's going to have a massive problem with that. You've already heard them. Anonymous Republican leaders and insiders say they would much rather back Donald Trump because they think they can at least work with him, make deals with him, negotiate with him, and probably temper him. That's at least the working theory, is that they can sort of check the worst of his excesses. I think that's short-sighted, to put it gently. But I would say there are going to be a lot of people, a lot of your more moderate, especially and probably vulnerable Republican leaders, particularly in the Senate, which faces the prospect of flipping back to the Democrats, looking to see if there's a way that they can shore up Donald Trump and make sure that he's not just absolutely bloodied before taking over as nominee, if that looks like that's where it's going to head. And then they can at least present the notion of a united front going against Hillary on the Democratic side. I would say that's probably what most of them are thinking right now.
There's this whole thing about the off-the-record conversation in the New York Times about immigration, and it's being paraphrased as Donald Trump saying he doesn't believe what he says about immigration. But I think it was in January this year, not meaning to bring up a name of another journalist here in this conversation, but Trump sat down with Byron York and basically said, look, I'm a businessman. You have your starting statement, and you have to be ready to negotiate to get what you want. Or as maybe the conservatives would say, it's the Reagan rule. All right, 20% of what of you I disagree with, but I can live with getting 80% out of you.
I would say it's generous to think that Donald Trump is playing by something like Ronald Reagan's rules.
No, but I'm saying it's a parallel where
right.
he's able to negotiate irregardless of what his foundation statement happens to be.
Right, it could be. The problem with Trump is that you have a record of just massive inconsistency and sort of outright contradiction on a whole host of issues. So whereas I think you could say with Reagan, you had a reliable basis from which to work, the problem, or at least the danger of the New York Times story is that he's basically telling him, I don't believe in any of that stuff. I'm really open to doing sort of, whatever is going to be best for me, is going to, prop up my image or whatever the case may be. That's the danger that anyone runs, supporting Donald Trump or getting into bed with him. All these, speaking of these establishment leaders, is maybe you can make a deal with him, but it's not at all clear what the opening bid of that deal is going to be, despite what he's said already. So that's a consideration that they've got to make. Whereas I think with Cruz, for instance, you're much more likely to know what you're getting.
Wrapping up with Tom Ian Tuttle from National Review, nationalreview.com, on the web here on Issues and Ideas. Let's just assume what is presumed at this point as far as what November is going to look like is a Hillary versus Trump. Is Hillary able to run against a Trump? Because if you turn back the clock of Romney versus Obama, it seemed like the GOP establishment said, no, don't talk about that nor say that about Obama because that's hostile, that's racist. And same thing when McCain ran against Obama, too. It seemed like, that's a no-touch, that's a third rail. I don't think that's a concept that Trump would grasp onto.
That's right. I think if Donald Trump is the nominee, it's going to be a sort of no-holds-barred, cage match from his side. The problem is, and I wrote about this yesterday, is it seems to me you have a Democratic Party that institutionally has been in a state of rapid decline under Barack Obama, and you have a nominee who's just wildly unpopular, even among Democrats. This is why you see Bernie Sanders gaining the traction that he has. what nominee Donald Trump would make possible is for her basically to run completely away from substance and to say Donald, you know, after Donald Trump is anti-Hispanic and run attack ads with him attacking the judge in his Trump University case or his, you know, shouting down protesters or his, you know, deportation. Trump is racist and talk about David Duke. Trump is sexist and, you know, you can cite his own books. And she has the potential to turn out a lot of disillusioned or otherwise disenfranchised Democratic voters who may not be thrilled about her, but would be eager to vote against Donald Trump. That's not something you would have seen in 2012 or in 2008. So that's the danger of a Trump nomination. The flip side, of course, is that he's going to be a relentless attack dog, and it may make her look extremely weak. I don't think that would be, you know, particularly difficult to do.
Yeah.
So it's sort of anyone's guess. I think that the numbers, if you run the raw numbers, suggest that Trump would have trouble. And he is the only, of the three major Republican candidates, he is the only one who's actually running behind Hillary Clinton in head-to-head matchups. Both Cruz and Rubio beat her. They both also have better favorable, unfavorable ratings than both Clinton and Trump. The gap between Trump's favorables and unfavorables is higher, is wider than Hillary Clinton's. So it's the argument that we're hearing that Trump is the most electable, that he's going to, you know, just get up there and crush Hillary Clinton, I think is vastly overstated.
Is National Review Institute Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism, nationalreview.com on the web, Ian Tuttle. Ian, thanks for being here this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you.